Welcome back to Word Up with Dani Katz. I am your host, Dani Katz. I am an author, journalist, and a quantum languaging coach and consultant. What that means is that I teach people how language programs consciousness, how language programs reality at large, and how to transform reality and evolve our consciousness with language. I've also been known to cultivate and share an opinion or two or 12 about culture and consciousness and how they are evolving, devolving, and being manipulated by the powers that were. Here at Word Up, we are devoted to fostering critical thinking while supporting you in becoming your most authentic, empowered, liberated, realized, amazing version of yourself. Our every show aims to expand your consciousness, raise your frequency, sharpen your critical thinking skills, and make you giggle. And think. Given the radical uptick in censorship over the past few years, combined with the complete co-opting slash decimation of my own personal industry, journalism, I started Word Up to have a free speech-friendly platform in which to engage exploratory, solutions-based conversations with visionaries, mystics, original thinkers, and rebel badasses who are helping to make the world more wonderful. The first half of my interviews run between 30 to 90 minutes and are always posted here for free public listening. The second halves are reserved for paid supporters on my Patreon and my Locals platforms, where for as little as $5 a month, you can access all of my second half conversations along with oodles of other bonus content and opportunities to drop in with me, to drop in with our High Vibe tribe, and lots of other awesome things. In addition to interviews, Word Up also features quantum languaging upgrades, planetary service announcements, and propaganda analysis, which I call Spot the Propaganda. Thank you so much for tuning in and for sharing your sacred attention with me and our High Vibe tribe of change makers. Be sure to click that subscribe button so you can stay abreast of our every episode. Thank you for also clicking the like button, for sharing far and wide, and for leaving some kind words as a review as you are authentically inspired. As well, if you are gleaning any value whatsoever from these shows, consider supporting me on Locals and or Patreon. And as you are wanting to learn more about my quantum languaging coaching and consulting services or nab copies of my books, find me on DaniKatz.com as well as on quantumlanguaging.com. Okay, I think that's it for our housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy this episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Greetings, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Today I am joined by me. We're solo podcasting today, and I have a bunch of little tasters, little trifles for us to tiptoe through until we land on the main course, which takes us from the 51st gene key. For my Gene Keys nerds out there, or even my human design nerds. And worry not if that's not you, because I will break it down. And it's going to take us from the 51st Gene Key into the fixity section of your very favorite book, The Language of Betterarchy. And we will learn why nouns are traps, verbs are freedom, and how to degerund accordingly. Before we dive into it, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment. All of those things are very helpful in the realms of algorithm. Now, I'm gonna take a little sip, just ground, drop into our just right pace, and then we'll get into it. Okay, so launching into it, warming up, I want to touch in on a couple things that have happened and some observations I've been making. First, though, I don't know if you guys can see this. I found a little blue crystal today in my
burgeoning Datura garden. And I have a show coming out with Ashley Stinnett, who is a Sasquatch experiencer. She was recently in the documentary, I think it's called Flash of Beauty, Paranormal Bigfoot. So I've already had this Sasquatch situation on my radar because of my conversation with Ashley, which will be coming out in the next few weeks. Stay tuned, it's a doozy. And apparently the Sasquatch are really into leaving gifts. So we had a big rainstorm yesterday and I went out to check on my Datura today. They're just starting to sprout, but also I had found a little lizard spine and I had offered the lizard spine to the Datura. So I was also going to check to see if the lizard spine was still there. The lizard spine was not still there. It seemed like, you know, some of the plants were kind of lying down. They're all healthy, worry not. No Datura were hurt in this narrative. And in place of the lizard spine was this pretty blue crystal. It had no dirt on it. It wasn't, it didn't look the way everything else in the little patch looked that had just been through a storm. It was just like laying there super clean. It fits in my hand perfectly. So I believe this is a gift from the Sasquatch. Stay tuned. We'll see what continues to unfold. All right. In my ongoing coverage of the weaponization of customer service, I keep thinking that it's peak cuckoo and then in comes another user agreement or this one. I didn't even intend to talk about this. And I've mentioned before how I'm trying to get my California driver's license mailed to me. And this most recent fail was the New Mexico post office sent it back to the DMV. So I called DMV. Their robot had a human call me back like 3 days later. Miracle that I actually answered my phone, which doesn't happen that often. And he said, okay, we're sending another one out, but yours was sent back. So why don't you call your post office so they can take care of it? So I call and I get routed to a call center. And the woman is like, well, I can't help you if I don't know why it was returned. And I'm like, well, it wasn't returned to me. So I don't have any information to share with you. Long, uninteresting story short, I was routed from the call center to my actual post office. When I called my actual post office, of course it goes to a computer. The computer, after, you know, taking 3.5 minutes to tell me which days they're open, which hours they're open, then it gets into the press one for this, press two for this. So I called 4 times and I pressed all the buttons for all the choices to see if there was a way to get to an actual human. And every time, here's what happened. While we're transferring your call, would you like to sign up to receive text messages from us, a text survey about your experience today? No, that's what I said. No, I do not consent. Okay, can you confirm that this is the right number to text you the survey? No, I do not consent. Okay, we'll text you that survey. Unfortunately, no representatives are available at this time. Click. So 4 times the exact same thing happens. It's obviously a trap. There's obviously no representative there who I can actually talk to unless I go in person, which will be my next step. But what a scuzzy, low vibe ploy to get my phone number and to rope me into receiving text marketing messages. I mean, the swiftest way to piss me off is to text me some sort of advertisement or text me to sign up for your political cause. Like, I do not consent. Like, I'm not into the phone. And do we not see the social engineering that's pushing us to attempt to normalize the phone being with us 24/7. I mean, I wasn't planning on talking about any of these things, but I've been locked out of my hotel tonight account and I'm planning a road trip. So I want to have it the option. And as I'm filing support tickets, I'm explaining what's going wrong, and I get a response back saying, "Oh, we see that you're using the desktop version. We really encourage you to use the smartphone version. It's going to be much easier for you." And I'm like, "You know what? No. Like, it's not easier for me. I don't want to stare at a smaller screen. I don't want anything to do with the phone except the bare minimum, and I don't even really want that." So also noticing this like push to make us have phones. Like, I ordered tickets to go to the SFI talk at the Lensic a couple weeks ago. We're welcome because, yes, it was complete torture, like woke, commie, techno-fascist, victim whining, everything you would imagine. So I get a confirmation email that says, either you can print out your ticket or bring your smartphone in with this QR code, blah, 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 blah. So I just call the box office and I'm like, "I'm gonna need you to keep tickets for me at will call. It's not my job." I didn't say this. They're like, "Sure, no problem. But it's not my job to print out your tickets. I'm paying you for the tickets. You are the box office. That's your job." Notice how many tasks they're trying to pawn off on us. How cashiers no longer bag our groceries for us. I'm supposed to ring up my own stuff at the thrift store, but I don't work there. I'm not trained on those machines. I already have a job. What am I paying these like blue-haired, miserable people who are like leaning up against the wall and screwing around on their cell phones? Like, why are they even here? They're not doing anything. But here's the last one, and it does roll into this stupid cell phone nonsense. I'm about to go to light phone, guys. Just heads up, it is happening. Thank you for holding me accountable. So I go into this little Middle Eastern restaurant where I love their Greek salads with a side of lamb. So I don't order online. I don't do that. I don't order on my phone. I physically went in and ordered there. I walk in and there's like the cook in the back, and then there's the young girl, she's probably still in high school, who's sitting on a stool behind the old-fashioned register. And God bless, I love that it's an old-fashioned register. I love everything about the operation, except this experience. So I walk up to the counter, and she's on her phone like this. And I said, "Hey," and she goes, "Hey." And I realize she's not gonna look up, and she's not gonna stop what she's doing. It's like, I haven't experienced it to this extreme as of yet. So she's looking at her phone. She's like, what can I get you?" I was like, I didn't say anything. You know, I just said Greek salad with a side of lamb. Okay, thank you. She was staring at her phone the whole time. When she finally reached for my cash, there wasn't eye contact. It was just looking at the cash. I mean, maybe it was a spectrum issue because I so know so many of these young ones have received a lot of the medicalized interventions that can lead to an increase in spectrum like humans, but it didn't feel like that. It just felt like she was raised with this thing. And then I was like, I'm getting so tired of being the squeaky wheel who complains. I wasn't going to complain to her. She doesn't get it. Like, if I mentioned that this isn't, you know, appropriate customer service, she would have no reference point to even know what I'm talking about. So there's no point with that. I mean, I'm sure maybe I could call the manager, but it's like, at some point I just get tired of hearing myself bitch. And I'm wondering, like, is it... I mean, of course it's not a lost cause because we're not in full-fledged tyranny, but I just got, that was one of those days where I was like, I don't even know what to do with this. I don't know what we're going to do with these Gen Zers who never knew human interface customer service, and I don't have confidence that they're going to be of any help in taking us back to that. And I just hear myself saying, taking us back to that. And maybe that's my own delusion and attachment to humanity in my exchanges that I'm even continuing to lobby for that. But here's what brings me to this, is she had a tip jar in front of the cash register. And I'm like, for reals? Now, it wasn't like she was doing anything obnoxious, like, are you gonna tip me? But it's like the audacity to ask people to tip you for doing your job, which is just sitting there punching in some buttons, maybe calling out an order, doling out some change. Like, she literally could stay on her butt the whole time. And to ask for a tip for that, I feel like it's time to acknowledge that we've gone off the rails with the tipping thing. I waited tables for 13 years. Might have been 12. Never trust me when it comes to numbers. But I definitely waited tables for more than a decade. And I waited tables in Beverly Hills, which is like the worst of the worst in behavior, like the most entitled. Working in Beverly Hills was always a special form of torture. And I worked at the time, it was the only five-star hotel restaurant in LA, the Peninsula. And that, oh my God. We used to call that blood money, working the breakfast lunch shift for like Shaws and dignitaries and Sylvester Stallone and like crazy people and, you know, people with more money than God. It was the worst, the worst, the worst. But coming from waiting tables, where when I was waiting tables, we weren't making minimum wage. We were making less than half minimum wage because that was always the deal for waiters, was like, well, you can pay waiters under minimum wage because you know they're going to be tipped. Then we were all taxed. I believe it was maybe 12% of our total sales. So we're being taxed on the tips that are being used to supplement the non-living wage that we were all being paid. And for anyone who's waited tables, you know, like, that is an exhausting, high stress job. And when one is dependent upon tips to make a living wage, to pay one's rent, one learns really good customer service, like how to be polite, how to be attentive, how to be conscientious, how to anticipate what your customers are gonna need, not just because you're going to make some money off of it, but because you care. Like, that's the other thing. Like, any good waiter has a really good work ethic and actually cares and derives pleasure from doing a good job being of service. So coming from that background in LA, in Beverly Hills, which I would venture to guess is like the worst of the worst of the worst that we had to put up with to deliver a good service, I don't think someone who's on her phone pushing buttons is, I think she's out of line to even ask for a tip. And it's everywhere. Like, it's at the shoe repair place. It's at the dry cleaner, like for reals, the dry cleaner. Like, all you're doing is going to get my ticket and the clothes associated with it and charging me. Like, what? I thought tipping was for going above and beyond. Like, we seem to have misunderstood it. And the peak cuckoo in the tipping range for me was, I was in Durango a couple months ago and found this food truck. I ordered some food. I paid with a card. He had a tip jar, and I had already grabbed cash and put it in the tip jar. Not because I felt like he did an exceptional job, but because I felt like, it's got to be kind of tough, like standing inside a little box on the side of the highway all day, like, all right, I'll give this guy some cash. And I'm a good tipper. I'm not like a buck tipper. I'm like a, you know, $3 tipper. So I had already put cash in his jar and I handed him back his iPad, which I'm already not a fan of. He's like, hey, what's this? You didn't finish everything. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I signed it. He's like, well, you didn't do the tip. And I'm like, I gave you cash. It was so rude, like the expectation. That's not what a tip is. If you are expecting to get more money from your customers, then it's on you to charge more money. But if someone is not going to read your mind, cross this, you know, psychic abyss that has you feeling like you deserve extra money, and if someone doesn't do that, you're gonna call them out on it? That's not a tip. That's extortion. Like, that's an up fee. That's an extra charge. That's not a tip. So call it what it is, but you're going to berate your customers. And then just the fact that he was wrong and that I tipped him cash, because as someone who's worked for tips, I understand how much, like, exponentially more beneficial cash tips are than charge tips, because you actually get to keep all the money. It was just such a fail, and it didn't leave me with like warm, fuzzy feelings about that guy or his business. Moving on from the annoyances to a win, because I was so happy for my client's success today. We'd had a few sessions. She's on some fancy board, high finance business stuff, and she had been talking about how, like, as you know, the only woman in a lot of these meetings, a lot of the time she would say things and not feel heard. And she would say something and it would go completely ignored. And then someone else in the room would repeat what she said, and then everyone would respond, and that guy would get all the credit. And it was becoming a pattern. It was a pattern. And so what she kept repeating was, "I just don't feel heard. I just don't feel heard." And I said, "Okay, well, what can we do to ensure that you are making other people in the meeting feel heard?" Like, that was like, let's employ that as a strategy. So that thing that you're wanting to receive from your collaborators in this project, how about you lead by example and you go in and you give that to the meeting and let's see what happens. So on our call today, she was saying how she had been, you know, said multiple times during the meeting before she injected, you know, "I hear what you're saying, so and so. I recognize that this is what you want." And these were the communication tools that she and I had practiced, is let's figure out different ways that you can communicate that you're really understanding and hearing what the other people are saying and what they're wanting to achieve. And as she did that in the meeting, not only was she heard and embraced and received in a way that she hadn't been before, but she watched as other board members in the meeting started to pick up the same tool, and in their collaborative discourse started to say, "Oh, I hear what you're saying. I hear that you're wanting XYZ." So it was one of those, you know, for us coaches and consultants, it was one of those warm, fuzzy moments where, you know, we get to see our clients like actually experiencing change, utilizing the tools and the techniques and the solutions that we're sharing with them, and then seeing and experiencing real deal change in their lives. So that was a good one. That really made me happy. And it's a great collaborative tool for all of us to keep in mind, which is especially in groups, right? Where like there's always going to be a more dominant personality and a less dominant personality and a difficult personality and like all the different kinds. It's so helpful to just acknowledge people by name and let them know that they are being heard. It allows their defenses to come down, and then they're more available to listen because they're not figuring out if they were heard or if there's a different way to say it, right? We acknowledge that we've heard it. Now they can be present with us, and hopefully, you know, and in this case, it worked like a charm, open to receive us with the same grace and respect that we are indicating we are receiving them. We also went over another really cool communication tool that folded in to something that had been coming up around relationships in general. So, when I was at the Confluence event in Texas, one of my very favorite talks, if not my singular favorite talk, was when the Engelharts, the entire family, did a panel conversation about community and how communities can succeed. And for anyone who doesn't know the Engelharts, they're the ones who created Cafe Gratitude, that chain, you know, California chain of restaurants. They also had, I know they had some books. There's one on, I think, relationships, money. I have them in my library. They also had a game. Maybe they still have it, right? They have this empire, and you know, a lot of the food that they serve comes from their farms. And then their daughter Molly, who's also going to be on my podcast in the next, I think she's coming on next month. That'll be a really juicy conversation. She started her own chain of restaurants called Sage. Now she has a regenerative farm called Sovereignty Farm in Texas, right? So the whole kind of family communal dynasty continues to expand and grow and thrive. And so I was really intrigued by their talk on successful community. And one of the things that they shared was how important it is to put people in roles where they can succeed, right? Don't put someone in a role if someone's like really good with their hands, really good with making things, like, why would we make them the bookkeeper where their skill set is not going to translate and they're not going to succeed? Like, that's not going to serve the community and that's not going to serve that individual person. And so I started to see this in terms of my working relationships and my friendships. And it came up for me, I had a week where multiple girlfriends reached out to me to complain and then have me coddle them. And all three were because they were feeling under the weather, right? And so the messages were something like, oh, I'm just feeling really icky and I'm having a hard time and I'm just, you know, just really exhausted. And it's like, know your audience and set your friends up to receive, so, or to succeed. Because when I'm, you know, in all of these instances, when I wake up in the morning, I do all of my practices, I get into my body, but once I hit my desk and my laptop, it's go time. And I'm boom, 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 boom. And there are some days where it's like stacked really tight. And you know, it's one thing after the other. And after the other, and a lot of what I do is show up to support other people, whether it's my coaching clients, whether it's my consulting clients, whether it's, you know, I'm doing a freelance writing job right now. So I'm dealing with, you know, the client's misgivings and stress around other aspects of the project, right? So I'm, and not to mention, like, I'm on a few people's, you know, speed dial when they're in crises. So I feel like I'm spending a lot of my days, like, A, racing to keep up with what I have going on, and B, giving, 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 giving. You know, when I get comments on my videos in Patreon or Locals, or, you know, someone reaches out, like, I want to be present with the communication and acknowledge and lean into, you know, whatever the ask is. So it doesn't really work for me on so many levels when I'm getting texts in the middle of my work day. And now, granted, we all have free will, but I recognize the pattern. I recognize the formula, right? So I get, you know, a 90-second message of a friend whining about her headache and her bellyache and she didn't sleep well and she's not going to work. And I'm like, it's not helpful, right? Like, it's not, you're not lifting me up. It's not even neutral. It's like, hey, let me add more weight to your shoulders with my complaining, right? It's also indicative to me of that person is not for 1 second as they're reaching out thinking of who they're texting, right? They're not connecting to, oh, this is my friend Danny, who I know that this is a really busy work day for her and this probably won't help. This is my friend Danny, who writes books and teaches courses and records podcasts and videos on transmuting victim consciousness, on being self-responsible, on not complaining or telling bummer stories when things are hard enough as they are, like being under the weather. Also the fact that my friend Danny is has a lot of pronounced Aquarius qualities and really isn't the best one to reach out to when I'm in need of like coddling and pity and nurturing. Look, I can absolutely access those places when it's the appropriate structure, right? With my clients, for sure. With my friends, when we're in that space, you know, and there's like kind of a silent agreement that we can lean into one another for support. But when it's the middle of my work day and you're calling on me, the Aquarius, to like, you know, read the script that's part of that formula, which is like that wide-eyed, like, oh, sweetheart, well, are you drinking enough water? Blah, 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 blah. Like, I hear myself saying this and I'm just being real with who I am and what my capacity actually is. And when I'm, you know, juggling as many things as I am juggling, I really do not appreciate friends texting me as they're seeking external validation, external soothing, external compassioning, empathizing, because they are too lazy to do it themselves. And yes, like, I'm owning that. It's annoying. It sucks to be sick. Of course it sucks to be sick, but unless we're talking about something where you legit need help, this was an instance of like, you know, detox symptoms from parasite cleansing, and this was not this person's first parasite cleanse, like, handle your shit. Don't go smearing it around my life. I got enough on my plate. P.S. Have you met me? And so we ended up having a conversation about it. And I said, I don't feel like you're setting me up to succeed as your friend. And I also don't feel like you're seeing me as your friend. The fact, and there were some other things that, you know, and we had a, like a very loving, like very constructive conversation about it. But there were some other things where I was just like, it doesn't feel like you see me. It feels like you're reaching out to rando friend X. And I would just appreciate like a little more consideration in reaching out to me so that you're setting me up to succeed in our friendship. And the other, you know, it was also showing up in this other way wherein this happened, I'm not even kidding, at least a dozen times, I've gotten a text from this person saying, hey, I'm going to the hot springs in an hour, do you wanna come with me? Hey, I'm going to the hot springs this afternoon, do you wanna come with me? And every time I say, oh, I would love to come with you, alas, I'm not really set up for these kinds of spontaneous adventures. It's always preferable for me if you could give me a couple days advance notice so that I can make it happen. So this happened again. And it was on the same day that I have my group coaching salon. And this is someone who's part of my group coaching community. And she reaches out to me 45 minutes before our group coaching call. And she's like, hey, leaving for the hot springs in the next few minutes. Do you want to come? And I'm like, for reals? Like, do you know what day it is? And like, obviously she's not thinking. She's just like off in the clouds doing her own thing. And that's fine. No harm, no foul. But what I pointed out to her was like, it's not setting me up to succeed in our friendship, because every time you reach out with these spontaneous asks, 100% of the time, I say, no, I can't do it. And I would prefer if you could give me advance notice. So not only am I saying no, like every time it's a fail, fail, fail in terms of turning her down, it doesn't feel that great to me as someone who's like, I'm very much looking forward to working less. And the reason why a lot of things are a little bit kookier right now is because I'm taking the steps necessary to get things more automated, less dependent on me, more streamlined, more professional, more monetized so that I can step away. So every time that I'm turning down an opportunity to go to the hot springs to sit here and stare at my screen and do more work, like, that doesn't make the workload lighter. Like, that doesn't make it more fun. It's just reminding me, like, oh, right, I'm saying no to a lot of fun things because I painted myself into a corner without a lot of foresight around running a business. And I, again, like, totally give myself props and spaciousness. I'm learning in my own divine timing. It was never my intention to have my own business. But my, you know, my career plan for myself as far as a writer didn't really line up to like my lived experience of this reality construct where if you're not willing to play the game, speak only half truths, whore yourself out to different organizations that, you know, like to thought police and censor and tell me what I am and I'm not allowed to say, that I wouldn't be allowed to play the game. I didn't know that. And I don't victimize myself to that, but it just, you know, it made it so, it set me up to come up with a different plan for my career at a stage in my life where I didn't know that I would be doing that. So it's fine. You know, I'm figuring it out and I'm proud of myself. I'm expanding so many comfort zones and doing so many things that I didn't know how to do, that I'm still learning to like doing, but I'm doing them and it's great. But it, like, it's just not helpful when I'm already spending far more time in front of my computer than I want to, that, you know, there are a dozen times when something really fun has been offered and I'm like, no, I can't do it. 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 Like, that's not setting me up to succeed. So that communication went really well with my friend, and I'm, you know, very happy that we can reorient. But it was something that I was talking about with this client today who had the breakthrough in the meetings, where she was talking about, you know, someone who she works with who's very bossy, and how she was talking to a coworker about how best to deal with this. And the coworker said, oh, well, I just ask her a bunch of questions so that she gets to exercise that bossy muscle, she gets the validation. And then, like, now that part is out of the way and we could just deal with what we need to deal with. And she was saying, like, you know, I think that's interesting, you know, to throw people bones. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I can see the inclination to kind of minimize it as throwing people bones. And yes, it is throwing people bones, but it's also setting people up to succeed. And some of us are difficult. And I definitely count myself among, you know, that segment of our human us. And, you know, some of us have weird personality quirks or, you know, weird things that require some handling. And I will say, as someone who is difficult, I love it when people handle me. I love it. I mean, I'm not talking about like shills or, you know, sellouts or people who are, you know, whoring for three-letter agencies, but my friends who care about me, when they know the realms where I can be a little bit sticky and they know how to handle me and love me enough to handle me, it's amazing. I feel seen. I'm working with someone who's being creative and improvisational and figuring out the right way to work with me. So it was another one of those, like, yeah, he's setting her up to succeed. He's allowing her the opportunity to do the thing that she's good at, so that now for the rest of their engaging, she's in her version of pole position, right? Now, she might not be at a stage in her development where she wants to unpack the fact that her comfort zone is at the high of some, you know, like imaginary, is at the top of some imaginary hierarchy, right? It's not our job to, like, I don't know, steer everyone's evolutionary process. It's my job, but it's not everyone, right? It's the people who are ready and who are matched to be working with me in terms of accelerating their own evolutionary process. But I felt like it was just smart, such a smart strategy. And it's such a great thing to do, especially in collaborative situations, is like, look at where you can give whomever you're dealing with an opportunity to succeed. You know, if it's in an action, in a task, if it's on a, you know, a small conversational level. You know, I have a couple friends who like to drive. They like to take the lead. They like to make the decisions. Great. I let them do that because I know that's going to make them happy. It's going to quell any anxiety they have when they can't do that. I can do that. Now they're more comfortable. They're more at ease with me in our dynamic. This happens at the gym, where sometimes I'll see, you know, a lot of men at the gym will like to come up and give me, and I've seen it with other women, advice on using the machines or doing different exercises. I have been an athlete since I was 3 years old. Like, I was training for the Olympics, you know, with that very clear goal from 5 years old. You know, I'm really adroit when it comes to exercising and moving my way around a gym. And I love receiving that type of support and advice from dudes at the gym. Whether I take it or I throw it away is irrelevant. I see that it's making them happy. I see that it's giving them a boost. Perhaps they're going to share something with me that I can really put to use. We never know. Very often it does. Very, very often. I don't know everything. But I've seen other women at the gym and friends of mine like bristle. Like, ugh, I don't need to be told what to do. I don't need to be mansplained about a machine. And it's like, okay, like, mansplaining isn't a word. We all, you know, we all have egos. We all have means of strategizing and compensating for various cracks in our egoic structures. You know, no need to demean and bring in a gender thing. But, you know, it's like, it's just such a great attunement in terms of a perspective. And I'm taking, you know, what they were talking about in this community panel discussion, and I'm applying it in, you know, really every relational capacity, is how can we set one another up to succeed? And as you're listening, I would love your feedback on this. And if this is something you do, and other tricks and techniques, because I think it's really valuable, especially as things have gotten like more and more tense and divided and, you know, conflict laden and aggressive among our human family. I'm thinking of, you know, in the ninth gene key, which is the taming of the small, the power of the small. I might be getting that right, but it moves from, looking at my chart, it moves from the shadow of inertia to the gift of determination to the city of invincibility. And he talks about, Richard talks about in the description, in times of war, friendliness is your best defense. And I am paraphrasing, but it's something that helps generate goodwill amongst everyone we're interacting with, where we're looking, you know, it doesn't take much, and I'm not in a phony manipulative way at all, right? And not with everyone by any means, but with those relationships that we value, that we're cultivating, where we see that we're working together towards a common goal, be it love, intimacy, joy, play, you know, profit, a project, you know, a company. In all of those instances, it's going to support and foster more harmony and, you know, just better relatedness in general when we have a tiny part of our consciousness that's keeping an eye out for ways that we can help the people we're engaging with succeed in our dynamics, as well as in, you know, whatever they're doing in the day to day. So I wanted to bring that in because it did come up today. I'm gonna pause for a sip. It's always bittersweet when we get to the end of a special beverage. And by we, I mean me, because yes, I have a beverage fetish. I admit it. I'm a naughty girl. All right. I've kind of been pussyfooting around the meat of the matter. I want to talk to us about the 51st gene key. And for those who aren't clued in to the gene keys, if you're new, if you just started listening to me, the gene keys is a book. It's a spiritual transmission, and it delineates each of the 64 DNA codons as pathways to enlightenment. And each of those 64 DNA codons has a shadow, a gift, and a Siddic frequency. The Siddic frequency is spelled S-I-D-D-H-I-C, as we're adjectivizing it. And that's like the enlightenment frequency. And so each of these pathways, it's like there's 64 different pathways to enlightenment, basically. And it's also this sort of encyclopedia, not only of all our DNA coding, but of mysticism, spirituality, philosophy, quantum physics. It has a lot. It's very, very, very dense, chock full, beautiful, amazing book. And the 51st gene key is one with which I have an ambivalent relationship. I have some resistance around it. It is the key that lives in what we call in the gene keys paradigm, in the hologenetic profile, my EQ, which is emotional intelligence. And so the 51st gene key moves from agitation, that is the shadow, to initiative, that is the gift, to awakening, which is the city, a big, giant, vague umbrella term, awakening. Now, in the gene key system, the only way out of the shadows is through, right? There's no tiptoeing around them, there's no avoiding them, there's no shoving them under the rug. We go straight into the belly, and then we come out the other side by transmuting the negative aspects of the shadow with the gift frequency. And so I like to think of the gifts as like, they're the clues to come into right relationship with the shadows, right? So I'll oftentimes talk about the 30th gene key. For me, the 30th gene key sits in the sphere that codes for what is considered the core wound, right? The primary shadow that, according to this system, I hold on behalf of the whole of humanity. And for me, that's the 30th gene key, which moves from the shadow of desire to the gift of lightness to the city of rapture. And I didn't understand the core wound for a while. It also shares the same sphere in the profile that they call vocation. And while it does code for vocation, I find it's, you know, it's for me, the contemplations around it as the key that codes for the core wound that I carry for humanity has been, to this point, a much meatier, more multidimensional exploration. And the way it goes is, whatever gene key sits in the sphere of the core slash vocation is the key that when we reflect on our lives, right? When we look at, when do I become dysregulated? What were those conversations or those circumstances where I freaked out? I had a tantrum. I, lost my cool. I created conflict, right? Where do I get triggered the most? What is the most, what will really set me off more so than anything else? The clue to that lies in whatever key is coding for the core. Now, I was contemplating the gene keys for at least 10 years before I understood how this key that codes for the core wound that I hold was influencing me. And I knew from all of my gene keys, courses and workshops and whatnot, I knew what this key was doing, but I didn't see it, right? Like it was just kind of this vague intellectual knowingness that hadn't really landed and that was more so confusing me. But I saw like, and it's gonna sound so silly, but it was, for whatever reason, I wasn't seeing it. But like the through line for me is unmet desires and not getting what I want, how that could lead to a lot of dysregulation. Now, because the 30th gene key moves from the shadow of desire to the gift of lightness, that lightness is the clue, right? That's the kryptonite for the shadow. That's what unlocks any kind of bondage or enslavement I'm feeling towards the shadow is bring lightness towards those desires, hold them loosely, detach. The human vessel is wired to desire. We're never not going to desire. It's just a matter of can I hold those desires lightly instead of digging in and feeling some sort of need for them to be realized in the way that I'm wanting them realized, right? So I use those gifts as clues and keys to transmute the negativity of the shadows and attune me to the frequency of the gift, which, in this gene key systems, we want to be operating in those gift and siddhic frequencies, and we use a lot of the tools and teachings to help us transmute those shadows so that we can be staying more consistently in those higher frequencies. So, similarly, when it comes to the 51st gene key, that initiative is the kryptonite to the agitation. Now, the shadow of agitation, and all of the keywords in the gene keys, Richard is defining them in his own way. So they don't always mean exactly, what the dictionary definition of agitation is going to mean, or initiative is going to mean, or beauty, or any of these words in the gene keys. But the shadow of the 51st gene key that expresses as agitation is, it was a tough one for me to face. I'll just put it that way. When I was reading the gene keys for the first time and I started reading the 51st gene key, now the way that all of the keys are organized in the book is it starts with the shadow and then he writes about the gift and then he writes about the city. So as I was reading about the 51st gene key, knowing that it sat in my profile, in my EQ, I didn't get more than a couple paragraphs in before I shut the book and put it away. It was too confronting for me. It's a dark shadow. I mean, all the shadows are dark in their own way, but it's definitely connected to rage. It's definitely connected to harshness. It's definitely connected to these like volcanic turn on a dime explosions, of, 0 to 80 mile per hour, like rage and frustration and harshness, like just exploding. And it's not something that I'm, super proud of. So it's taken me some time, and I think I'm still in the process of coming into right relationship with this key and the fact that it sits in my, in the sphere that codes for my emotional intelligence. Now, just to make it a little more spicy, in the gene keys, every key is modified with a line. A line from 1 through 6. Now, those lines will correspond to the I Ching. You could go deeper into it if you'd like. If you want to learn more about it, hit me up for Gene Keys reading. I do those by request, they're super fun. But basically, every line that modifies the key will have its own expression. And what it's basically talking about is how this key will tend to express as modified by this line. But also, the line is helpful in terms of teaching us how to work with the keys, what structures work with the key, what sorts of energetics we can bring to our contemplation to the key to help it out. So for me, that 51st gene key is modified by the 2 line, which in the emotional intelligence sphere of the gene key system is rage. Ah! So I've already got a ragey key coding for my emotional intelligence that's modified with an actual rage line. And so this has obviously put me in a deep contemplation of anger and rage. Notice how I do not say my anger and I do not say my rage because I feel no inclination to create any sort of identification or quantum entanglement with these energies that I've been tasked to master in this lifetime as part of my soul's growth and evolution. And for me, as part of the collective, these are some of the energetics that can express through me and part of my challenge and, my tasks in this lifetime is to master rage, master anger, to make it so that I am not surrendering my sovereignty, my agency, my poise, my joy, my nervous system based on, the hyper-fast movement of these energies that are not mine. So the 51st gene key, I'll give you another example. I was in the parking lot. I was walking through a parking lot a couple weeks ago, and this young woman in a car, she sees me coming, and I'm in a crosswalk. Like I legit have the right of way. And she sees me coming and she guns it, like she steps on the gas and like whizzes by me really fast. It was a total dick move. And there were other people who watch it and they were like, whoa. And it was one of those situations where it was so aggressive and uncalled for that I resisted the urge to like slam on her car or kick it or something as she drove by. And after she drove by, and I didn't do it, I didn't like freak out on the car, it occurred to me, I've done that. Like I've been in that space and that I'm not proud that I've been in that space and I'm not proud that I've done that. But what I was clear on when she did it, and I'm like, that's the 51st shadow. Because the 51st shadow, it's connected to a type of like hopelessness or despondency, right? It's not like the rage is so big and loud and that agitation that is the shadow is so physical that it can be, it's not like top of mind to parse out what's going on, but it's basically like a screw it, this place is so hopeless. I don't care about my life or anyone else's life. And it is a key that codes for some pretty bad behavior. Now, I'm not a violent person. I don't inflict harm on other beings. That's not a way that it is expressed with me. And a lot of people will say the tongue is mightier than the sword. And I definitely have had plenty of experiences of on a dime just exploding like a big volcano, and this like huge mountainous avalanche of rage just comes pouring out of me so quickly that it's not even until after it happens, usually, that I even realize what's happened. It's just that fast. So, okay, so my task this lifetime is to learn how to move from the shadow frequency of agitation into the gift frequency of initiative. And, as I understand this key, and I'm not going to say I've mastered any of the keys, I don't even know what that means or looks like. And as someone who's been working with the 51st gene key for as long as I have, initiative for me means like don't stew with that agitation. It's very physical, right? It's happening, in my chest, in my nervous system. It's like a buzz, right? It's like this electric buzz. It's like zzzz, and it's wanting an outlet. So for me, taking that initiative has been like do something, make art, have a dance party, play racquetball, make a different choice, delete the app, fire the web guy, like do something to take action towards transmuting this situation. Not every key is going to be physical that way. Not every key is going to be that like material or pragmatic. The 51st gene key is do something. Do something to make this better. Don't think another thought. Yes, there is, of course, and Richard mentions this in the book, there is the Vipassana meditation, and I am a Vipassana meditator where we could just like create space and look at it. And that initiative is specifically referring to do something. So, what has come up for me recently is a couple explosions around being ignored. And what I realized, I mean, no one likes being ignored, right? I'm thinking of Fatal Attraction. I'm not going to be ignored, Dan. Even back when that movie came out, like that struck me. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be ignored. No one puts baby in a corner. Don't ignore me. So what I've noticed in these instances of being ignored was like, oh, well, in the on the being on the receiving end of the ignored dynamic, I wasn't afforded those opportunities to off gas, to take the initiative by saying, hey, this isn't working for me. Hey, I'm going to invite this adjustment. Can I speak? Can we have a conversation about XYZ? Right? In the space of ignoring my usual tools for taking the initiative, which would otherwise help me off gas that brewing, boiling, beginning agitation, were not available to me. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, which I highly encourage because we're getting into some juicy material in terms of gene keys, in terms of the language of betterarchy, in terms of sharing some very outside of the box communication tools to help you unstuck yourself, delimit yourself with this tiny syntax adjustment, which I get into in the second half of today's podcast. You can tune in to the second half of this conversation and all of my second half conversations over at my Patreon and Locals communities, where for as little as $5 a month, that is less than an iced green tea with a little bit of monk fruit, you can get access to all of my second half conversations, my post-show throwdowns, bonus supporter-only content, advance notice of live events, workshops, webinars, courses, special discounts, so many juicy bonuses over on my Locals and my Patreon communities. You can find those at dannycats.locals.com. And at patreon.com/dannycats, thank you so much. Your support means the world and allows me to continue to make super cool content as I do. I'm also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com. It's the best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch regardless of whatever's happening out there in Thought Police land. I'm also nudging you to scope out my Language of Healing webinar that I talk about in today's podcast. It is one of a kind. There's nothing like this out there on the market. What this webinar does is it helps us understand how every word we think, type, write, speak is programming every cell in our body for health, for imbalance, for neutrality. And it's learning how to talk about some of our health initiations, upgrades, challenges in such a way that we are programming ourselves for accelerated healing, for total complete recovery, for optimal health and well-being with our every word. You can find that webinar over at dannycats.com. And I think that does it. I think that does it for housekeeping. Thank you so much for tuning in, for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. Have a rockin' day.
And for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, for sharing, for commenting, and for leaving some kind words as a review, as you are authentically inspired. As you are receiving any value from my podcast, as you dig it, as you listen regularly, consider supporting me on Patreon and or Locals, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half podcast interviews, as well as oodles of bonus content. Your support really goes a long way in supporting me as a journalist and an independent content creator navigate her way through a really crunchy time in terms of free speech. And as you are wanting to learn more about my work in the world, my books, my products, my quantum languaging coaching and consulting, you can find me at dannykatz.com as well as quantumlanguaging.com. And if you're not down with a membership patronage platform and want to send me a one-time donation, you can use the Bitcoin link if it actually appears on your podcast listening platform. You could also send me a one-time donation by way of PayPal at dannykatz@pm.me or by way of Venmo, where my username is Sadie Bloom. Again, your support means the world and makes a massive, massive difference when it comes to continuing to share this work with the world. Thank you for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that you are omniscopic amazingness and for having a rockin' day. See you next time, superstars.